Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. If you can't tell, I am smiling the entire time while reading that because of the absolute banger that we got in this episode of Agatha All Along. Are you kidding me? What a banger. Bum, 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 bum. It makes me want to go clubbing, and I don't even club. That's how bad I want to listen to Agatha All Along. Are you kidding me?
Ugh. I mean, what are you going to do? It's a hit. When it's a hit, it's a hit.
It's a hit. I'm also smiling, Robbie, because for all of our listeners out there, prepare yourselves. This is not going to be a Boston cream donut type episode. You're about to get a steak and potatoes. This is a broccoli, a vegetable to your diet episode. And I can't wait. I think I've said this before, but this is for sure the most excited I've ever been to record this podcast for WandaVision, at least.
Wow.
And that's because of the diet I'm about to give you all. Okay. Woo. Let's go.
Man, this episode was, again, just another cut above for me. Like, it's just this upward slope. And I think, you know, I've said this, but the way that WandaVision continues to embrace this kind of sitcom format,
yep,
but also play with it and innovate it is just incredible. Like, I think that when this all started, I saw them using this purely as a gimmick, and they definitely have in ways, but they've also managed to utilize that format to push these characters legitimately in directions I don't think they could have otherwise, and to play with the format itself. Like, it's just this genius thing,
yeah,
where, like, the episode this week is called Breaking the Fourth Wall, obviously, and that even has certain meta connotations wrapped up in it. But I think that there are even then layers to the way it's doing that that we'll get into here in a second. But I just don't want to, you know, before we get really into the weeds here, I just kind of want to be able to step back and recognize that once again, just as a piece of art, as a piece of television, this episode was just incredible.
I think it's fair to say that both you and I have been pleasantly surprised at how long they've kept this sitcom format going, right? Like,
exactly.
Fast forward 2 months ago, and I think we had read something about this, but I don't think I truly believe that we'd be on episode 7 and still following that literal of a format. And that's
right.
Been fun. And anytime you take two of Kyle's favorite things, the MCU and The Office, and you mash them together, are you kidding me? Play that banger again. Like, let's go. This is normally where I would start with leftovers. And what was so funny about this episode is I have 10 leftovers jotted down.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, immediately when the episode came out on Friday, and by the way, I go through these leftovers on Thursday. So I take all your messages and your comments on social media and all that, and I put it all together on Thursday. And immediately by Friday, like 24 hours later, like 8 of these 10 were rendered useless. Like, for example, the first one says, I think Wanda is going to end up being the victim at the end of this. Okay. Like, I had asked, will Vision have his memory wiped again? You know, because I was wondering, once he had gone out, does he come back in dead, and does he remember anything? And we got that answer. You know, so there was a ton of those. I do have, like, a couple that are still interesting to check in on. Like, still MIA, is Ralph, the beekeeper, and the missing person.
Oh, true.
Also Dottie, but then we kind of saw Dottie for the first time in a while. So that one's kind of rendered useless, but not really, because I still don't know much about Dottie. And then the only other one that I thought was really interesting is I still am trying to figure out how Sword got Vision's body.
Right.
Like, I wonder what went down there, you know, because he was in Wakanda, which we know is like not been that open to the outside world coming in. Maybe since Black Panther, you could argue that they're working with more organizations now.
Yeah.
But did they donate that to Sword? It's interesting.
That is a really interesting question.
And then I'm also wondering, how do we already have another organization the size of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Sword already be kind of corrupt? Not corrupt, shady. But yeah, it's shady.
Right.
It's just kind of funny there too, you know?
I want to, before we go any further, that's a really interesting question about how they got Vision's body, because you would really think that given that not only was Vision in Wakanda, which like you said is kind of historically closed off, but Vision's made of vibranium, which Wakanda would have an interest of keeping inside Wakanda, right? Like, it's strange that that would have wound up, of all places, with a government organization, because you would think if anyone, like Cap, would have taken Vision's body back and they would have, you know, buried him at the Avengers headquarters or something. It is like, I wonder if we're going to get answers on that, because that is not, it doesn't clearly follow that he would have wound up in government possession.
Right. You know what would be fascinating? If we actually had a post-credit scene in like Black Widow or Falcon and the Winter Soldier showing that, because remember, the order was supposed to be flipped. Like, wouldn't it have been funny if like they did a post-credit check-in of somebody discovering Vision and taking the body and like Wanda being pissed about it or something? Because again, that's, they were so going to shoot that at the end of Endgame, but now the order's been all messed up, so maybe they'll get rid of it. But anyways, that is not what I want to talk about today, but I thought that was interesting.
However, speaking of timing there, I am more and more intrigued by how much this show seems to be placed right after Endgame. Like, there keep being these cues to, like, even in this episode, Vision and Darcy are talking, and Vision's like, oh, you know, for me, this feels like a lifetime ago, but for Wanda, it was just a matter of weeks, talking about what happened at the end of Infinity War.
Right. But that was one thing that was funny for me, too, is did you notice that Monica Rambeau, when she's talking to Wanda, she says something to the effect of, like, I had to get through my pain. I know what it's like. I'm like, wasn't her pain 3 weeks ago? She went through that quickly. processed it fast. Unless she's referring to something with Carol.
Right. Which, I mean, I feel like we've gotten maybe glimpses of, or it could be just talking about, you know, her kind of having to struggle with her mom's cancer even prior, you know. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, that is an interesting point too.
How do you want to do this, Robbie? Because I normally have these notes linearly, but in this episode, I was so enthralled with things that I came back to my notes later and I kind of have like five chunks. And so I'm looking at like a mess right here.
Right.
But maybe you can just intro the episode and we'll just go from there and see how the spirit leads.
Yeah, I think we can go through more or less linearly here. And I think that that'll take us to certain spots where I am sure that we are going to camp out. All right, so without further ado, we have episode 7 of WandaVision. It's entitled Breaking the Fourth Wall. This was written by Cameron Squires and directed once again by Matt Shackman. We have the same cast and crew coming back. I don't think we have any major additions, with the exception of an Agent Goodner that we will talk about here momentarily.
Well, most importantly, who wrote Agatha All Along? Who wrote that banger? That's what I need to figure out. And it says Robert Lopez, Eric Bradley, Greg Whipple, Jasper Randall, and Gerald White. To you five, thank you. Let's go. That's the most important part. Okay, let's work through this. Wow. First of all, I'm going to take a small teeny bow here for getting The Office prediction correct.
Oh,
I know
absolutely.
A lot of people are saying the Modern Family thing, which Modern Family was obviously a huge influence on this episode.
Right.
But the theme song, it was literally The Office theme song. Like, borderline plagiarism. Did you notice that?
I mean, it was perfect.
And she even had the mug that she like says, I love Wanda, which is just like the world's greatest boss.
Yeah.
There were so many office things. And then you could obviously tell she was trying to play into the Michael Scott thing with like a zip it, zip it. She was trying to kind of do her version of Michael Scott.
And the am I right?
Right. Am I right? You know, like that kind of stuff. Really fun. And we kind of called that. So thank you very much.
Well, and before we get too much further, I did notice, especially on the second watch, at the very beginning, did you, you know, which is just a funny line when she's like, you know, we've all had that happen. Our fear and anger gets the best of us. We expand the false reality we built to deal with our own tragedy.
Right. Like we all do that.
But then she says, like, so the way I'm going to deal with this is today I'm going to have a quarantine style staycation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder if that line was written prior to the pandemic and it was just a crazy coincidence, or if that was an intentional shout out.
Yeah, people watching were like, and I, oh, what? Did I hear quarantine there? Like, what?
I know we're like trained now to hear that and intentionally recoil.
There's a few like hot button words now. Like even in this show, when they say the words like lockdown, you're like, wait, what? What? No, no.
It's funny you say that because I was reading an interview the other day with I want to say it was Kevin Feige, but just talking about how much even the kind of opening piece of Endgame was weirdly prescient in terms of what the world was going to look like, you know, within a year. And so it is kind of funny how Marvel's been toying with these ideas that I think are uncomfortably close to reality these days.
Also, by the way, with the theme itself, didn't you love how it was all Wanda now? Wanda, 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 and there was no Vision. Someone online, even, I think it was Shay, one of our listeners, pointed this out. Someone paused like one of the montages really quickly and noticed that we got that shot of the mailbox, and instead of the mailbox saying the Visions, it just said Wanda, which is kind of fun. And then one other thing that I found in there, do you know another Easter egg with the license plate? Did you see that?
No.
I love when I know something Robbie doesn't know. It makes me feel really happy inside. Okay. On the license plate that just says Wanda, it says Wanda. There's some numbers, and the numbers are 12, 28, 22. December 28, 1922 was the birthday of none other than Stan Lee. 12, 28, 22. And again, that's the extent that I love those kinds of Easter eggs, that if you dive into it, there's not more to it than that. But if you really search for it, you get a little treat. Hence the Easter egg. You get a little Reese's Pieces when you get there. You know, that's what I like.
I love that. And I think I was having a conversation with a friend of mine that was watching this the other day, and he was pointing out rightly that we don't like to compare properties too much on this show. Because, you know, I think generally that can be unfair. But he was just separating Marvel from other Disney mega properties, wink, wink.
Stop. can't do it every episode. Stop.
That maybe are not quite as good in the details like this. And I don't think it has to be an insult to those things. It's just this stands out from any other kind of mega property, whether it's that one that I'm referencing, or Harry Potter, like any of this stuff that has an extended universe, just none of it can touch this level of care. And I know I don't want to say this over and over again, but I think that like what you're talking about there is just another example of like, that could so easily not have been done.
Right.
But someone just kind of added that little detail. And if you know, you know. And I just think that that's such a fun example of the way that Marvel really is invested in the broader history of what they're doing, but also kind of paying these things off to those who are, you know, who have eyes to see it.
Preach it!
And as long as we're talking about the theme, did you notice that I think it's the last still there is a calendar and the month is just Wanda again, but there's a date with a heart on it like there was in that first episode.
Right.
Except it's a different date. I want to say that first episode wasn't in August 24th.
Oh gosh, that was 23.
Maybe it was
August
23.
Someone's going to correct us. Yeah.
You might be right. But anyway, it definitely was not the 10th, which is what we get here.
Nope.
It's Friday the 10th. I think interestingly, I almost would have expected it to be like a Friday the 13th thing. But I'm wondering if there's any there. To me, that feels like it has to be intentional, and it has to be intentional that it's a different date. And I'm wondering if someone listening has already gone down this rabbit hole and knows what that's a reference to and why it's there. And if so, please message us, because I think that's kind of a fun thing that I imagine has a fun answer.
Wanda 10. The 10th of Wanda. I have no idea. Please message me. I think it's going to be like the Stan Lee thing, like where it's probably one tiny little Easter egg, not like a major date. But why circle that, you know?
Interesting. Well, and why a heart again the same way, you know? Like why not another indicator?
Okay, so if we're moving through this linearly, Vision did remember. I was surprised that he just kind of wakes up and immediately is like, oh my gosh, you're the person I was trying to talk to with Darcy. Mm-hmm. I thought the envisioning of that entire circus thing was pretty fun. Like one of the main evil looking dudes is now the guy in the whatever Speedo thing.
Right.
Trying to get them to go. And like, did you notice the detail? Again, the details. The detail of Darcy was chained up, you know?
Yes, as the escape artist.
Going into the hex. Right. So then she becomes like the escape artist person.
I thought that was so clever.
So clever. More importantly, though, I just throw those in to remind you how well it's done, but then I want to get into the big questions, too.
Sure, sure. I do want to say, before we move on, there was that brief scene we got with Hayward that I think is just important because they note that, like, he asked what's happening with the broadcast, and she says, oh, dead air. And so I think it's interesting that on the one hand, we see a show still, right? Like, we get the theme, we get the whole Modern Family Office deal. But unlike the other episodes, this is apparently not being broadcast as a show. And so I think that immediately, before we even get deeper into it, tells us that there's something different at play.
Right, but we're still getting a sitcom vibe on the inside.
Right.
But it's not being broadcast. Okay, this is the first WandaVision episode where I had a category, I'm going to be careful with this word, of quote-unquote negatives. Okay, everyone stay calm.
Easy.
How can
easy.
You? And they're not even negatives. They were just questions, okay? But we're at the point where I want to bring up the first two of them.
Sure.
The first one is that, okay, this wasn't an hour long, people. So whoever lied to me about saying the last three episodes were an hour long, be careful when we deal in rumors, Robbie, because someone has to pay the price, because I was expecting an hour. And when I saw that please stand by thing come on, I wanted to throw my remote through the television. The second thing is, and this is so minor, so no one judge me, do you feel like Darcy should have been more urgent in her responses to Vision? I mean, Vision is trying to figure out all of this, and he finally has all the answers right in front of her, and she's still so casual about it. Now, let me answer my own question. I wrote that down the first time. Just like, come on, Darcy. Like, he needs help. Like, tell him everything. When I watched it the second time, I realized that obviously a lot of that conversation probably did happen in the drive around. I just didn't see it all.
That's
so
true.
So maybe I'm just led to believe that she was urgently explaining. And then I noticed, like, she punches the guy, right? So she was pretty urgent as far as getting out of there.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what you were supposed to take away, is that they had the bulk of that conversation already.
I know, but I kind of wanted her to be like, Vision, oh my gosh, I got so much to tell you. Like, we got to get away because I got so many things to tell you. Listen to this and this and this and this and this is that you don't know and you're dead and this, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No,
but
that's...
I wrote a question mark behind it because it's dumb.
It's a fair critique, but I think that they did leave room for that part to happen. And you're right. Like, they did urgently get away and...
Right.
You know, and they are trying to get there as quickly as they can. And I think that was the whole thing with the different obstructions that are keeping them from getting to the house.
Right. You know what's funny, though, Robbie? I have brought up that specific critique, like, more than three times in our MCU rewatch. Have you noticed that? Like, in Doctor Strange.
Oh, right.
I want Christine to be a little more panicked about this. And she is. She says, like, right. What's going on? But part of me is like, oh my gosh, she's coming through a wormhole in the closet. Like, what the heck? He's floating around, you know? And then I kind of felt a similar way when,
like,
in
the
Iron
fact
Man
she's
3,
able to still, like, operate on him and comprehend the existence of an astral plane at the same time.
Right. And then, like, in a similar way, Iron Man 3, when Pepper dies, I kind of want Tony to be like, oh my gosh, I thought Pepper just died. Like the sole reason I'm existing is gone. And instead he's making jokes and stuff about Mark 43. It's kind of the same thing here. I'm like, Darcy, like, don't joke around at this moment. This is like your chance to fill in Vision. But I didn't feel as much the second time around. Okay. Anyways, I did love that dynamic though. It is Darcy. Right.
I mean, that's sort of been her, whether you like it or not, that's kind of been her MO of like making light of more serious situations. In general, one thing that I think has been fun in this show is the way they're pairing up different characters in different episodes and having them play off of each other. You know, like we had Vision and Agnes last time. We've had Wanda and Pietro, and we've had like Jimmy and Monica and yada yada. But here, what I really liked about the Darcy-Vision conversation is that Vision is asking all the questions that we're asking as viewers. And the show has been doing that really well by putting those questions into the mouths of different characters in different episodes. Like, I think you could argue that Darcy early on was asking the questions we were asking, then Jimmy mm-hmm. Woo was asking the questions we were asking, and now mm-hmm. for Vision to just be like, wait, okay. So you're saying my AI comes from Jarvis, my corporal form comes from Ultron's plan for global annihilation, and she's like, yep. And he's just like, okay, so what am I now? And she's like, I have no idea. And I love that they're, again, perfectly tracking kind of where we've been. And that's the craziest thing that you pointed out last time, is this show really does feel like it's being written in response to, like, fan discussions sometimes. But obviously it wasn't. And that's just the most impressive thing about it on, like, a creative production level to me.
Darcy Vision, a new spinoff, season 2. I love that Vision's first question is, are my kids safe? I love that. And then I love that Darcy says, I don't know. Because if he is asking the questions we're asking, that's the truth. We don't know that yet.
Right.
And there was a couple others where she says, I don't know. So I agree with that. I love that dynamic. And I love that they're just so on the nose asking those questions.
Right.
It also eventually, as these two go along, puts in perspective a little bit the hurt that Wanda's feeling, and that Vision's kind of putting that together, that he's getting the details from Darcy that he did die and Wanda had to watch it twice. And it's kind of funny when you hear Darcy explain it. It's a little bit like Luis explaining it, you know?
Right, that's so true.
Yeah, then the bad guy did reverse time and he died again. but I love that line where Vision's putting it together and he says, you know, for me, this is just a memory and it's even been years. But for Wanda, it's just weeks ago.
Right. Man, yeah. I think this episode did such an incredible job of portraying Wanda's depression in such an honest and I think helpful way. And that's what Candace and I kept coming back to. And I say that because you're right. Again, it just sinks in. We've talked about this, like all the stuff she's been through, but hearing him say that this was just, again, so recent, that like that scene that we talked about that we got in the Marvel Legends episode of her confronting Thanos, like it sounds like that was not long ago at all. If the events of Infinity War were weeks ago, you know, it's like, so holy cow, to think of the spot that she is in at this moment, which, you know, obviously plays into the conversation we'll talk about soon between her and Monica, but just this idea that she can't get out of bed, that whole conversation, it reminds me a lot of what I liked about Thor's portrayal in Endgame, and I think these characters have a lot in common, in the way that it's sort of played for laughs, but not in a way that disrespects the actual kind of mental health issue there. And I know that's a really fine line to walk, but like the conversation she's having where she's like, you know, I've come to think of things more as, you know, the more I think about it, I just think everything is meaningless. And, you know, you guys can totally make your own decision. And they're just like looking at her like with their jaws dropped. But it's just this kind of brutal portrayal of like, yeah, this is what happens when someone feels like everything that they've ever held valuable has been ripped away. And for 6 episodes, we've seen her kind of trudging along, trying to just wish it all away. Yeah. And just pretend that it's fine. And I think, yeah, Vision's statement is so kind of chilling. Cause yeah, like she is operating where, like, basically within the same month, you know, she's had to kill her own, I mean, not then husband, I guess, but kill the person she loves and then watch him be murdered again immediately. And then now she's kind of thrust back into this world. And gosh, yeah, it's just, it goes back to one of the things I liked about Iron Man 3 that I think Marvel kind of set up, where I just like that they are willing to sort of dig into this stuff. And it makes the characters feel more real. It makes them more human. And I think it's what makes this a good story and not just a spectacle.
Right. Iron Man 3, you have a superhero dealing with anxiety, which I guarantee has never been in a superhero movie before, first of all. In this, you have a person dealing with depression and grief. Same with Thor. Like, those are good points. Like, those are not typical topics for superhero movies, and I love that Marvel does that. I specifically wrote down two quotes here. She says to the kids, if Vision doesn't want to be here, there's nothing I can do about it.
Gosh.
Which was kind of sad. But also, yeah, you're right. They're doing it during her Michael Scott vibed thing. So it's kind of like the truth is underneath the joke. You know, there's a little bit of truth in every joke. It's kind of like she's trying to be funny, because then the line you said too, I have that written down. I'm starting to believe everything is meaningless. Then she kind of plays it off with a joke, and you can make your decision, and I'm the mom, and you expect me to have all the answers, but I don't. Love those two lines. So I know I just reiterated what you said, but I totally agree. That was a huge positive to this episode, and it's been a huge positive to Marvel in general.
Yeah. Well, and it's the writing there, but it's also, not to be a broken record again, but Elizabeth Olsen's performance here is maybe my favorite we've gotten from her so far, because it's so nuanced. I mean, the range she has in this episode alone is incredible to me. And I just, man, if we don't walk away from the show with, I know she's already a massive star, but she should just be skyrocketing in terms of her net worth in Hollywood, because she is, I mean, she's just showing that she can do anything you hand her. I mean, she's been like 15 different versions of herself in these 7 episodes, and they all work so well.
No doubt. She's unbelievable. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say this is my favorite version of her, but yeah, this show in general has taken her to the next level, the next step for me.
Right.
Fun Easter egg number 2 there in that scene. I just thought it was kind of funny that she's eating sugar snaps with, you know, the Thanos snap being a thing.
Right.
I think that was kind of funny.
Right.
You know, a little, the more you know kind of thing.
Well, and if we're talking about little product placements there, did you notice that we also see Wanda taking those Nexus pills that are advertised in the commercial that we still need to talk about?
Okay, for that I did not notice. And I love that we're doing this like one up of each other. Oh yeah, Robbie, but did you see that she had red hair? Yeah,
I did see that she had red hair.
Dang it. I didn't know she was taking the pills. That's fascinating. Can we save the commercial talk, or do we want to do it now?
We can save it. I just think that might be the first time, although again, I would invite people to tell me if I'm wrong. I think that's the first time we've actually seen an advertised product show up in the show, right? Like, I don't know, have we seen anyone have like a Strucker watch, or anyone like eating the yogurt, or, you know, like, I would imagine that there are plenty of opportunities for them to sneak that stuff in, but this is the first time I noticed it.
We'd have to fact check that, because there's also a chance there was a toaster in the first episode that we just didn't even notice. We'll have to look into that. That's interesting. Then Catherine Hahn, Agnes, shows up, and it's immediately the typical funny thing that we're thinking of from her. I loved, by the way, I thought she was the star of this episode. Like, I know you've been praising Catherine Hahn's performance from the other episodes, but this was the one for me that kind of pushed over the top. Like, I thought her talking heads were more natural even. I thought they were so good when she says, I did bite a kid once, and looks at the camera. Now, by the way, we'll come back to that. Is there more to that? There's a popular theory online that maybe she ate the kids.
Wow.
and that would be so dark. And it's possible. But I mean, the line of, I did bite a kid once, is kind of funny.
Well, that does play into kind of the classic witch mythology, right? From like, even from the Salem witch trials, which is where that character is supposed to come from in the comics, is that they eat children. So.
Right. Which is ridiculous. But, you know, We'll get there. Then we get another talking head of Wanda again, where you hear that voice. Do you think this is maybe what you deserve? That was fascinating.
Yeah.
Are we led to believe that that voice was Agnes?
I mean, it was a man.
I know, but it does kind of sound like a lowered, pitched down version of Agnes. It really does. Go back and listen. A listener wrote that in. And then later we see her, you know, in the big reveal sitting behind the camera. I don't know. Either way, what are they getting at there? Why would Wanda deserve it? Are they just saying because she expanded the hex and broke some of the quote unquote hex rules?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like in some ways it's just messing with her, right? And I think we see at the end that Agatha, and that's the big question that we're going to have to talk about, is just the why of all of this. And that's what I love about this episode.
Yes.
And I'm not going to get too far ahead, but it sets up less how and what questions and more why questions, which I always think are more interesting.
Right. Okay, so when I get to the end of all this, I have five major questions that I'm still left with, and I can't wait to discuss that in depth. But the very next thing after that is the commercial.
Yeah.
Which is the Nexus thing, which this commercial, by the way, was so funny. This was maybe the funniest one to me. Did you listen to the dialogue about the realities you could create?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't like that one, I mean, really funny. I wrote down some of the lines. Or the reality of your choice, because the world doesn't revolve around you. Or does it? Which right. I love so much. And by the way, those two commercial actors are really funny to me.
Yeah. Well, isn't there a line too where it's like, this could either alleviate your depression or make you more depressed?
Side effects could include more depression. That's what it said. There's a whole breakdown in this show that could happen on the commercials alone.
Oh, yeah, and easily.
I think that will be one thing that'll be really fun to reflect on when we're finished with WandaVision. In like a rap episode of like how literally were they translated? Because like you said, this is the first one where we're seeing her actually take the Nexus pills. But also, and I'm not going to go deep into this, and I need you to fill in the blanks here, but Nexus could theoretically have multiple meanings, which I was struck by because Lagos, right, was such a literal translation.
Right.
Strucker watch. We get where Strucker was involved with Wanda. But here we have one that, maybe they're referring to the Nexus in Age of Ultron, which is where Tony has to go, like the internet headquarters, to find Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is where I'll let you chime in, Nexus also has another meaning in the comics with realities. Go.
Right. So there will be a couple things like this that we talk about in terms of the comic sources. I think what's really interesting on a broad level about Scarlet Witch is that the lore around her in the comics has shifted so much, going back to her creation and then all the way through the way she was dealt with by Brian Michael Bendis in the events we've talked about. There have just been these constant, almost rewritings of what her powers are, of whether she's a mutant, whether she's not a mutant. I think we've talked on the show before about how in Jonathan Hickman's current X-Men run that is widely acclaimed, she is referred to as the Great Pretender by the mutants. And so the question there is always like, what are Wanda's powers? And are they like, are they more of like the Doctor Strange type? Are they more of the mutant type? She started out being able to do these little kind of almost bad luck hexes. We got a shout out to that in the last episode when Pietro is like, oh, you've come a long way from your little red wiggly woos.
But pause there. That's where I always have to default back to, okay, if it's been really questionable in the comics as far as different routes they've taken, I come back to what have I seen in the MCU of her powers?
Well, no, totally. And I think that that's the bigger takeaway from this for me, because we talk about the Nexus and it could easily, like a lot of this stuff, be just a shout out to the fact that yes, in the comics, Wanda is known as being a quote-unquote Nexus being, which means she's one of these people that can alter reality itself. And sometimes that's seen as being limited to a certain reality. Sometimes it's being seen as kind of in the context of the multiverse, which is, again, why everyone, I swear, everyone is just begging for WandaVision to lead into a multiverse. And It could. This could easily be that. And I do have some theories on how that could happen. I just still think it's so funny that people are saddling this show with doing this one thing that it hasn't shown it's necessarily prepared to do or required to do. Like, there's so much other interesting work it's doing, and I don't know why we're demanding this of it. But that could be what we're getting. It could be a window into something like that. Or it could just be a shout out to the fact that that is a word associated with Wanda in the comics. And what you said also, you know, that internet hub from Age of Ultron, maybe it's a combination of the two, where it's showing that just as there was an internet hub in the MCU that we've seen, there is also a hub of realities, and that Wanda is somehow at the center of all of that.
It's clearly tied with realities and just playing with that, and that could be the extent.
You know, what I was struck by, again, is just we keep getting this reality language, and in preparing for this episode, I actually went back and was rereading Avengers Disassembled, which I still maintain people focus on House of M so much, and I really think this show is going to end up pulling more from Avengers Disassembled than people think, because that's where we really get a lot of the explanation of what's going on with Wanda and her trauma and how that leads to this kind of mental break. And reading through that, again, I just see over and over and over again, Doctor Strange in that comic is explaining Wanda's powers. It's maybe one of the fuller explanations that we get of how Wanda's powers work. And he just keeps talking over and over about how much she has control over reality, how her powers involve shifting reality, changing reality. Reality can be whatever she wants it to be. And we've gotten so much of that in this show. And I'm like, man, are her powers from the Reality Stone or the Mind Stone, Kyle? Like, I know that they're from the Mind Stone, but why is it always going back to her being able to alter reality when, like, to your point, if we're looking at purely what we have gotten from her in the MCU, we have never gotten anything like that. And that makes me think, like, is this another red herring? And a lot of the stuff that we think has been Wanda really has been Agatha the whole time. Agatha all along, if you will.
Agatha all along. Okay, dude, I'm okay. Oh, I loved everything you just said. This is where I want to get to some big points. This is the steak and potatoes. We've gotten there. We're here. Okay. The very next scene after that is Monica Rambeau and Jimmy show up to get in that moon rover thing, and they meet a person that maybe is the aerospace engineer. And I called you after I watched this because this is a fascinating discussion I can't wait to get into. And it ties into the Nexus thing too. I'm about to speak out of both sides of my mouth.
Love it.
Was the lack of an aerospace engineer kind of a letdown? I think that's a reasonable question to ask. In this case, just strictly in the show, I'd have to go back and watch again. It really seemed like they were hinting at this aerospace engineer being somebody notable. That's why the fans ran with these theories of Reed Richards or Rhodey or Doctor Strange or whatever.
Right.
A Skrull. They went through all these theories because it seemed like strictly in the show, in that particular instance, it was building up to something. So now I'm about to say another thing. It's possible, I think, that we haven't actually met the aerospace engineer.
Uh-huh.
And that was just like part of the crew, and that was not her actual contact. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still that chance out there. Secondly, though, it's also possible that it was just a letdown and a missed opportunity, and that's okay. Like, if you felt let down, that's not a bad thing, because it did feel like they were building that up. So to me, I was a little bit like, oh, really? It's like they were driving to meet somebody. Like, I was so anticipating who is that going to be.
Right.
And then thirdly, that led you and I to discuss again what we have been trying to reiterate on this podcast. There can be a danger in over-speculating. And what I mean by that is, you know, with this weekly format, we're left with cliffhangers to talk about all week, every week, and that's so much fun. But where I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, at the same time, it sometimes can lead us and our internet audience to take things and run with them so far And you spend so much time speculating on something that you get convinced it's going to be said thing. And when it's not, then it's a letdown. Like, I get nervous all the time with shows like this, that the hype gets built up so much that there's nothing, literally nothing on planet Earth that they can do that everybody will be fulfilled.
Right.
Now, part of that is because maybe they just sometimes do things not very well. Like, I get that. That's possible. On the other side of it, maybe it's because we over-speculated and you don't, you know, you build things up in your head. So, like, then, I'm going a little out of order here, but we do get that scene with Agatha all along, right? And right now, if we stop the whole show, we're led to believe it's Agatha all along. And I get that. There right. is still a chance, and I'll get into this later, there is still a chance that there's a Mephisto or there's a nightmare out there and all mm-hmm. that stuff. There's also a chance there's not. And either way, I get nervous that, like, when Agatha was revealed, is that a letdown? Because I've already speculated from day one that it could have been her. And let me give one final point. Like, I've said this before. There's something fun about not knowing anything at all. And I'll never have that again. But, like, I've said this on this podcast. I was the guy who, when Thor's hammer showed up, I had to Google what that was. That's right. how little I knew. So everything that happened was fresh. Like, when Colonel Rhodes shows up, I don't know that Rhodey's eventually going to become Iron Patriot because I don't know who he is. He's just Iron Man's friend. So right. every time there was, like, a reveal, it's really fun for me because I didn't know that was going to happen. Fast forward now, and I know more about comics than I've ever known, and we're doing this podcast where we're predicting things. And so I said at the beginning of this podcast, Robbie, this is a long rant, but what's going to happen when we get some of these things right? Is it going to feel like a letdown? So that's kind of the end of my rant. Like, was the Agatha thing a little bit of a letdown? And was the aerospace thing a little bit of a letdown because we had built it up or because it legit was a letdown?
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, the Agatha thing, I will maybe put a pin in for a second.
Okay, fair. Because I have more on that too.
Right. The aerospace thing, I have a couple thoughts. One, I totally agree with you, and that I think that is the danger of again running with stuff and then setting up expectations that it's not like, oh, you know, we have too high expectations for the show. It's that maybe we just have the wrong expectations. And so then when it's doing what it's doing really well, but it's not what we want it to do. Like, and the reason why I think that that matters, especially insofar as people wanted, like, Reed Richards, is, again, and we talked about this, and I even said, and I still say, it could have been an interesting thing to introduce a non-powered Reed Richards, have a very quick cameo, something sort of like what Hawkeye had in Thor, or like what Claw had in Age of Ultron. I love when Marvel does that stuff. I would have been so down for it. But again, that is me asking the show to give me bridges to other things. And I don't like being in that headspace personally. And I just don't know that it's a constructive place to be as a consumer of this stuff. Because at some point, if everything is just a means to a new event, if everything is just a means to the introduction of something else, like, what are we even doing here? Like, what are we, are we just asked, like, is it just a race to, like, how can Marvel throw in everything that we love? And then whenever they give us, like, if all we're looking for is mutants, right? And then Marvel gives us X-Men, well, then what are we, like, are we going to be watching that X-Men movie waiting to see how they introduce, like, Apocalypse? Or how they're going to introduce, like, the Morlocks or whatever it is you want to look at in the X-Men universe, where I'm like, where does that stop? Because sometimes it's just, to your point, like, this is its own thing. Let it be its own thing and enjoy it for what it is. And I don't think that that's, like, a, you know, fatalist perspective there. Like, because it's not like we're resigning to enjoying something that's any lesser than. I think, if anything, that's allowing this to be the quality of thing that it actually is.
Well, and that's a fine line because I think it's fun to speculate and you want to try to speculate some things. I just come back to, is the speculation coming from what they've given us in the movies?
Right.
Or is it coming from other storylines it could be pulled from in the comics? Because there's no guarantee that they're going to do that. But right. I think the aerospace engineer felt like a little bit of a letdown because that wasn't from the comics. That was from right. the show. The show itself seemed like it was building it up. So that was fair to speculate on, to me.
Oh, totally. No, totally. I think it was fair to speculate on. I just think, again, it's to me, there are two different ways to kind of be let down by that. I think to the extent you're let down because they were making that seem like a moment, and it just wasn't. I mean, even watching it back again, if it is, in fact, Agent Goodner that Monica is referring to, there wasn't even – that wasn't even shot in such a way that that was supposed to be a major character introduction. Like, you don't even – the camera doesn't linger on her for very long. There's not really a moment of revealing her. It's just sort of like, oh, here she is. And then there's, like, a really little conversation about how, you know, Maria trusted her. And then – so I think on that level, you could be let down. I'll talk in a second about why I think maybe you don't have to be. But I think that is different from, again, being let down that this wasn't a reveal of another Marvel character to lead to something. I guess that's what I was getting at in that whole long rant a second ago.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Wow, there's a lot to this. There's a lot to this.
First,
I also have to give the disclaimer again that it's possible we haven't met the aerospace engineer. Tiana Paris, in an interview off camera, said that she, quote, couldn't wait to see what fans' reactions was to when they see this person.
Right, which could also mean a ton of different things.
Right. Could it mean that she's being sarcastic and is saying, like, they're going to find out it's nobody, and then I can't wait to see a reaction, haha? Or is it like, we haven't seen the person yet? So I still don't know that. And then regarding the X-Men thing, I'm with you. That's my fear, is like, if we spend more time focusing on the next big event, we're going to miss enjoying what we have now. And I know that sounds like way too deep for a show.
Right.
But I'm with you where it's like, I care about, like, these characters. I care about Wanda, Vision, Jimmy, Darcy.
Right.
I care about Agnes even. And I want to know what's about to happen to them. And I'm more worried about that than I am, like, how are the X-Men going to get revealed? Like, let's just wait till they get revealed. Well, and then we'll talk about it.
And the reason why I think that it does sound like an overly deep conversation, but I think it's an important one for us to have and to keep having, is because over the last, say, decade or so, the fan community has gotten this sort of sense of entitlement that I think can be really destructive. And I think that we've seen that play out most notably in the controversy around The Last Jedi. You and I have talked about this a lot.
Yep. Yep.
And I do think that, like, not this is not just a, hey, like, everyone should really live in the moment, you know, enjoy what you're given talk. This is like a, I think, a legitimate issue that could, you know, if not curbed, overtake the whole kind of MCU as an entity. And I think that, like, in the same way that you could argue it has in some ways with Star Wars and other properties, where I think that if you start trying to make your creators a slave to your consumers, then you were getting to a spot where the art is going to suffer, I think, necessarily.
Oh, what a word. I love that, because I've brought that up before, that one of my beefs with Star Wars is that it feels like they were making some movies and choices as reactions to the negative feedback. And I kind of wish I lived in a world where the person making the art didn't base it off what they think people were going to hate or like or whatever. That they made it truly because they thought this was the best thing and the best art they could make. And the MCU has done that. And I like that the MCU sometimes doesn't even give us that. And honestly, this is maybe controversial, but I kind of like that the MCU sometimes makes fun of that.
Yeah.
It's almost like, and we'll get there again, but like the song itself is so on the nose, Agatha All Along, that it's almost intentionally like poking fun of the...
Yeah.
Again, okay.
It's almost mocking us.
Right. That's what The Last Jedi did, and people hate it, right? That there were some things, like, for example, just let me give you one example, and I won't get into it. But we had built up years of guessing what's going to happen when Luke finally gets his lightsaber back from Rey. She's about to hand him that lightsaber. That's how The Force Awakens ends, cuts off right there. And then The Last Jedi comes in, and the first scene is he throws it off a cliff, like, whatever. And people thought that was so disrespectful. And it's almost like the movie itself was mocking your years of work of thinking about it. And that's what was so offensive, right? And it's kind of like this show, I mean, that last Agatha All Along thing, in a little tiny way, not nearly to the extent, was that. It was a little bit so on the nose to where it's like, oh, you think you can like research and guess into it? Yep, it is Agatha. Congrats.
Right. Right.
Kind of.
Right.
Otherwise, why write a jingle like that, you know?
Oh, no, totally. No, I'm totally, I mean, because otherwise, Candace and I were talking about this, it could have just ended with her being, you know, the name's Agatha Harkness, and then her eyes kind of flash purple, and that's it. And if they had done that, you and I would be having the conversation right now, oh my gosh, what does that mean? How much has she been involved? Did she kill Sparky? And I love that even down to that last line, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I did. I killed Sparky. Any other questions? Like, yeah.
I have to reiterate, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it because, yes, I guessed that Agatha was the person. And that's okay. But I love that because they knew people were guessing it,
right,
that it was that on the nose and that funny. By the way, and Catherine Hahn is funny in it. Her looks and stuff, like, I mean, she looks like a witch. She's literally right. Played witches in other roles. Like, it was so obvious that I love. They're just like, yep, and I killed Sparky. And I loved that. And well, I don't want to get to a point where I have to start defending things that I love. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, totally. And I think, well, before I get too far into that, because I know we're basically skipping to the end here, and I do still have
just
one more.
Just get into it. Just get into it. We'll come back.
I still have a comment on the aerospace engineer, though, before we lose that thread. And I know we're going to come back to Agatha and probably end up kind of harping on that for the end of the episode here. I just wanted to point out something on my second watch that did not occur to me at all on the first watch. There is no reason at all why this person, Officer Goodner, could not still be a Skrull.
Yeah, she could just be looking like that.
Yeah, I mean, because I was just thinking about it, like, and that would make sense why the reveal was not as big of a moment, but maybe they did intentionally emphasize it, and
ooh, that
it would make
is
sense why she had a connection to Maria Rambeau as well as Monica Rambeau, the whole
right.
comment about, oh, well, it's not just Maria we're loyal to, you know what I mean?
And maybe she didn't think it was appropriate to freak Jimmy out with an alien yet.
Right. And I mean,
all those people.
Exactly. I mean, maybe if it is like Talos's daughter, you know, maybe she's been in deep cover all this time, maybe. But I will say.
And maybe Monica just knows it and like loves it.
Right. It could, you know, to me, that would make
that
a lot
theory.
Of sense. Who knows?
And I think that would retroactively make people love it more. That's the other thing is we're not done yet, Robbie. Okay. I have so much to get to at the end of this, but you keep telling me to go linearly, so I'm going to go back. Okay. Tell me a little bit about Monica's powers in the comics, just briefly. I thought the scene of her trying to go through that after she does receive the rover or whatever was really cool. First of all,
so
that
cool.
The Hex like rewrites it to a half car, half rover was so fun. And it was so intense. The music is so good. Go back and watch how good Christoph Beck's score is right there. And then the creation and the visual of her going through, Jimmy yelling, don't go through. Then the overlay of the dialogue from Captain Marvel and her mother. And that's the way that I love them introducing new characters and new superheroes, right? Like we met her without powers. We do get to see her powers. Even though the show is not about her, this is like a good way to introduce her before we just meet her later and have to have an origin story, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. And in the same way that I thought that Vision scene last episode was a really tasteful callback to the end of Infinity War. I thought her getting her powers was a nice little callback to the scene where Carol kind of gets her full powers at the end of Captain Marvel, you know, where she's hearing all the voices in her head. And it's sort of this moment of like overcoming and doing the thing that, you know, arguably can't be done and going back through the bubble wall there. Yeah, I thought it was like, especially on my second watch, just the visuals there and the visuals whenever she finally comes through and the way she's seeing everything and the way it's kind of showing the different energies at play within the bubble, I thought it was all just really well visualized.
Well, and in the comics, and we got to be careful here because we just had that whole rant, but in the comics, for my knowledge, what are her powers?
So
historically,
that's the interesting thing. That's what I was saying earlier about... It's what makes WandaVision fun as a show when it comes to this stuff, because Monica Rambeau in the comics is not, it's not the same thing as talking about, oh, who is Captain America or who is Spider-Man or Iron Man in the comics, where there's kind of a pretty clear origin story you can point to. And no matter who is writing them at any given point, they still sort of have that same core dynamic to them as a character. Monica is different because, first off, she was introduced as Captain Marvel, like prior to the iteration of Captain Marvel that we now know being Carol Danvers. We've talked before how Carol Danvers used to be Miss Marvel. The first Captain Marvel was a man, sort of. It was Mar-Vell. He was a Kree. And we got sort of a shout out to that in the Captain Marvel movie as well. The reason I go into all that is I almost felt watching the Captain Marvel movie that the way that they are portraying Carol's powers are pretty similar to the way Monica Rambeau's powers have been portrayed in the comics, in terms of she can move at the speed of light. She has this kind of certain control over energy. In the comics, she's been called Photon. Carol's powers are like photon blasts. You know, like, it's such a... It changes it up in such a way where they could really go in any number of directions with it. And I think it is unique because, obviously, the way she gets her powers in the comics is not related to, like, a bubble created by Wanda. So I say all this. Really, all I can pull from the comics without going super far into it is she has this form of energy manipulation that almost – it kind of allows her to sort of phase in and out of things the way Vision does. She can – when she moves at the speed of light, it's not moving in the speed of light in the same way that Carol does, where she like has like a Superman fly. It's more like she almost turns into –
teleports?
Well, yeah, well, it's like the whole photon thing is she almost becomes like particles of light and rematerializes somewhere else. Like, that's how quickly she moves.
Is that what they were hinting at when she comes out and her eyes are blue and she's seeing all that weird energy-looking thing? Is that what they're hinting at? Or is that just because she went through the hex and it was messed up?
I think that's supposed to be part of her powers because doesn't – in the stinger we get at the end of this episode, I think we see her eyes do the same kind of thing as she's looking down into the basement. And I think the understanding is – that her powers are going to involve her kind of having this different way of looking at what's going on in the world, whatever that means, which I think is just really interesting. And like, they're going to have to make her powers, because she is undoubtedly going to be in Captain Marvel 2, they're going to have to make her powers separate from Carol's in some meaningful way. And so I think it's interesting that we haven't seen that she can fly. We haven't seen that she has the kind of like super strength or blast that Carol has. I think the way they're kind of teasing it is really fun because I, as a comic reader who I've read several runs that include Monica's character in different iterations, for the record, she's been Captain Marvel, she's been Photon, she's been Spectrum, like she's been all sorts of things. I still don't know where that character is going and exactly what kind of hero she's gonna be,
right?
Which, to go back to your thing, I kind of love.
Yeah, that's how we come back to what are we being shown in the movies,
right?
And so that's what I wanted to know. Thank you for the background knowledge, and the background knowledge is that it's a little sticky, and so I'm gonna wait and see how they envision her powers here on screen,
right?
But if this is how they create heroes, I'm into it. Like, I have background with her. It was a well done scene. I've liked her as a character and Tiana Paris as an actor. So I'm on board with it going this way. And I'm thankful that that was not, it doesn't seem like that was an introduction into the mutant gene. It was just more her cells were reorganizing to where she was going to have these kinds of powers.
Right.
I thought that was really well. And it actually, finally, that takes us into the final scene of the show.
Yes.
Which was so good, which is her confrontation with Wanda, where she's trying to help Wanda still. I think we get a shot of her being tossed out by Wanda and almost her resisting it.
Uh-huh.
Is that what I was led to believe? That she was strong enough to stop the flow of it and she lands on the ground like, I'm not scared of you. Then that dialogue was just so special. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
I brought up that it was kind of funny to me that she's already over her pain, quote unquote, that happened 3 weeks ago.
Right.
But man, for a minute there, I felt like Wanda was going to hear her out on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just the moment of it I love the way that this all came together, where in the past, we've seen Wanda just like flick away Monica like she was nothing. And that's not available to her now, because I do think that we're going to see part of Monica's powers or the sort of energy manipulation that are probably a really good counter to Wanda's powers. And so I think that there is that moment where she kind of has to be, where Wanda kind of has to listen and hear Monica out. And so the only thing, which I this is what I think was really interesting, especially on the second watch, is you then see Agnes watching from the window, and she realizes she needs to come out and steer Wanda away, because she probably knows that they're about to have this conversation, which goes back to something we talked about, I think, last episode or maybe two episodes ago, where we've said every time Agnes has come in, it's always been right at this moment where they're about to have a meaningful conversation in one way or another. And we definitely see that play out in real time here.
Okay, and I love that both Monica and Wanda at this moment still don't fully get what's going on. Like, Monica comes in and says, don't let him make you the villain. And my favorite line of the episode is Wanda responds, what if I already am? Or maybe I already am.
Right. Yeah, I wrote that down too.
Which I love. I love this idea that Wanda's feeling this depression and guilt over some of the stuff she's doing in Westview, but it may turn out that she's not really doing a lot of it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, if she truly doesn't even know how this is all happening, she is able to control some, but maybe she doesn't get it, which she didn't know about Agnes until this moment. And Monica's coming in saying, it's, you know, don't let Hayward make you the villain.
Right.
And Monica doesn't even really get that there's somebody inside doing more than that in the first place. That fun thing where it's like the audience kind of is getting this suspicion now at this point. Like, we kind of already know about Agatha.
Right.
But the characters don't. It's just this really great tension that's created there.
Man, that whole scene was just really interesting to me, too, in the way it gives us these glimpses of Dottie and of the delivery man. And I think we talked about this a bit earlier, but I don't know. Okay, first off, like you said, it's notable that we get Dottie here, because we haven't in a while. But there is something going on with the delivery man as well, because we've always gotten these shots, even going back to, I want to say, episode 2, whenever Agnes and Wanda are walking down to Dottie's for the whole pool thing, she sees the delivery man walk by, kind of like watches him walk away, almost in this like she's staring at his butt kind of a thing. And like, about to say, could that be Ralph?
Yeah, I was about to say that.
I've been wondering it for a while, but I don't. I mean, because you brought up, I think, that line maybe last episode where he says like, oh, you know, don't worry, your mom. He's talking to the kids, right? What does he say?
He says, yeah, what does he say? He says, your mom will figure it out, or your mom knows, or your mom won't let it. You won't. Your mom won't let him leave.
It's something like that. Like, your mom won't let him get like far that. Or something.
Also, Robbie, I have to point this out. This is crazy deep Easter egg, but he's like a mover in this one. He's like a moving company.
Oh,
he's like a shipping guy, and his shirt, the company he's working for, is Presto, which could just be a shout out to like, hey, they're a fast moving company.
Right.
But it also could be, you know, that's a word that's tied in with magic. And then this is where I'm at now. Okay. So Wanda then has Agnes step in. She was hearing Monica out, I felt like. Then she says, like, don't make me hurt you. And it seems like she forgets it. She goes in to Agatha's house, which we've never seen before. Uh-huh. Then we get this creepiest scene, which was maybe one of my favorite scenes, of where are the kids, the bunny eating in the corner, the weird fly on the wall. Then she has to walk through this creepy basement dungeon where my heart was racing, I said to my wife, because I didn't know if someone's going to jump out.
Yeah.
I didn't know if Agnes was going to be right behind her to attack her. I didn't know if we were going to see like mangled children down there. I'm being serious here. I didn't know what was going to happen. We then go into the lair. She reveals herself, and then we get the song, which I want to talk about the song in a second. But here's my big question, my big theory here, I'm wondering. I was fully on board with the idea that, like, Agnes has some weird role, but there isn't another, like, spiritual Satan guy. There's not a nightmare. There's not a Mephisto. That's where I was at.
Uh-huh.
upon two watches of this episode. And again, going back to my speculation conversation, I will be okay if it goes either way. I'm trying to convince myself I'm going to be okay either way. But I am now more under the belief than ever before that there's another person. Let me explain.
Okay. Hit me.
I don't think they would have set up Agnes being Agatha so literally from the beginning, unless it was like a twist within a twist. That they were basically going to give us exactly what we want. Kind of like we talk about with Endgame, right? Where the first 30 minutes of the movie were what we thought was going to happen, and they just gave it to us.
Right.
In this case, they kind of just gave us Agatha. Everything we thought. She's literally a witch. I mean, they gave her witch shoes in the Halloween costume, and now she actually is a witch. Like, they did so many obvious hints. Then they do the jingle, the song, that is so on the nose. Like, hey, you're an idiot. It's Agatha. Plus, there's so many hints still of another person being out there. There's too many references to devil and hell and Satan. Like, I even looked up, by the way, that weird fly on her window. You remember they zoom in on that?
Yeah, I was wondering
about
that.
Apparently, Mephisto, you would know more about this, is associated with a fly shape of some sort in the comics. If you're a comic reader, you're laughing at my knowledge of that. But
no,
also,
that's
like,
fair, yeah.
can I give you some other weird hints?
Yeah.
Like, we've always seen Wanda's powers be red. We now see Agatha's powers be purple. But when we go downstairs, the book is like glowing all orange. It's like maybe that's somebody else's thing. Another thing, like we have the demon spawn kids joke. We have the devil's in the details joke, not just here. We have the fly on the wall. We have, there's like 15 references to hell or Satan that I just don't think you can ignore. Like I could be wrong. But I would not be surprised if, here we go. I'm going on a huge limb and then I'm done with my rant. I would not be surprised if there was still one more reveal that there is a nightmare type character or Mephisto type character or somebody else still. And that part of the story isn't going to be wrapped up in WandaVision. That maybe that character, because they get so little time in WandaVision, is just an introduction to a villain that's going to be around in Spider-Man and in Doctor Strange 2. And I could be so wrong, but that's kind of where I'm at. And I have big questions I have to ask, but you go.
No, I mean, I'm with you there. I think there's definitely, so one we have to say, because I'm sure people will write in about this. The book there is almost certainly supposed to be the Darkhold. I don't know if you read about this at all, but
a tiny bit.
There's a book, and it's another one of those things that like you'll notice if you ever get into comics. It's all pretty, arcane, but especially the arcane portions of comics, whenever they get into magic stuff, it just gets, every writer kind of has their own spin on it, and there's a bunch of retconning, and there's a bunch of different, no, this is actually how this works. So that's why it all gets a little wishy-washy, but the Darkhold is just essentially seen as like the book written by kind of the ultimate practitioner of the black arts in the Marvel universe. And so it's sort of seen as the kind of quintessential black magic thing. Okay. And, that definitely, like, surely points to Doctor Strange. It almost, someone even pointed out prior to this episode that, there's a chance that some of this could be tying back into the stinger from the end of the first Doctor Strange movie, which I think is interesting, because that's a thread
Mordo.
That's been left dangling, the Mordo thing, where, he's going around and doing the no more sorcerers thing, and they have to either be dealing with that somehow in the new Doctor Strange movie, or that's just going to be left simmering like a long time if we don't get it picked up again until like a Doctor Strange 3 that may or may not be in the works. So that's kind of just something interesting to be considering, that he is still operating in the background out there.
But also, and I never want to put too much canon into something someone says off screen, but again, there's that famous Paul Bettany interview where he says he finally got to work with this character that has not yet been revealed, that's like a dream person to work with. And Elizabeth Olsen herself said there's a quote unquote Luke Skywalker type reveal in the show. And Paul Bettany confirmed it wasn't Evan Peters Pietro. So if there's still an actor that he looks up to that much that he hasn't gotten a chance to work with coming up, I again, I'm not putting too much into that, but that makes me feel like there is another character that we haven't seen. Is it Ralph, like we thought?
I think it is.
Jimmy's missing person?
So okay.
Are they the same people?
So speaking of the missing person there, one thing we haven't talked about, Monica and Jimmy, when they're heading to meet Agent Goodner, he mentions that Darcy did get through the final firewall there, and that's when we find out that Hayward was not trying to decommission Vision. He was trying to bring him back online, and that's why he's been tracking them, which, by the way, shows us that, you know, for all of Hayward's kind of pious, Wanda violated Vision's last wishes by going and retrieving his body, that he obviously does
so
not care at all, right, about Vision's last wishes, and is, you know, trying to turn him into some kind of weapon, which is troubling in a lot of ways. But so then I'm still left with, okay, was Vision the original missing person? Are we sort of meant to gather that is, you know, tying back in, like they were looking, or because, didn't Darcy ask Hayward early on who the missing person was? And he was like, that's classified. So it would make sense.
I don't remember that.
I think that was like an episode, you know, whatever that first Darcy episode was. And so, that's what I assumed. I wonder if there still is, in fact, a missing person out there. And maybe, you know, again, we got that Dottie shout out, so that's still a possibility. But yeah, I am, you know, I'm tempted to think that it is a Ralph thing. Because, man, like, this is a bit that is too intentional to just be nothing. Like, if
that would be a pretty good twist, because they've just mentioned Ralph casually in jokes. Like, it also could be that Ralph is just there for her jokes. Like, if she's a witch and she's aware of all this stuff,
right,
is it possible that she was just using Ralph as like her cover, like a joke? I have a husband, his name's Ralph, blah, blah. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just.
But it also could be that he's the guy behind the scenes.
Yeah. I think at some point, too, we're going to have to go back through and just look at all of the Ralph quotes and see what it is. Like, because here I thought it was really interesting. She says, like, Ralph says that I sugarcoat things. And I wonder if there's a rhyme and reason to all of the things that Ralph does or says through the whole deal. I do think there's something there, and I do think I could see, you know, as long as you're talking about Paul Bettany being excited about someone, whether rightly or not, my mind goes to these kind of legendary British, like, stage actors, that someone like Paul Bettany, I could imagine being really excited to work with.
Okay. Reddit did a deep, deep dive on this. These are like Reddit sleuths. And
wait,
I don't know
which?
If I want to get into
on
it. The cameo question possibly also being Ralph.
Oh, I see.
And again, I don't want to get into this that much. I'm just going to throw this out there. There's a huge fan movement. They think it's Al Pacino. And you think that's the most ridiculous thing ever. And just Google it yourself, because I don't want to get into it. I'll do a 30-second version. But, like, apparently in an interview back in the day, he said his heroes were, like, Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, and somebody else of that era, which is not what you're thinking.
Interesting.
And that he hasn't gotten to work with Al Pacino. And then they went and found that Al Pacino has quotes saying that, like, he does like Guardians of the Galaxy, and, like, apparently did take a meeting with Kevin Feige in 2015 about potentially doing something. And this is all stuff they've gone through. But I don't know if that's it, but if Al Pacino was like a Nightmare or Mephisto character, I could see how that would be a level of actor that would be a massive reveal would be Paul Bettany's hero. I could buy that, right?
Well,
that he got to work with him.
And I could totally see, I mean, Al Pacino as a devil figure. I mean, it's perfect.
right.
Perfect.
But I want everyone right there listening to stop right there with your mind. Don't let that go, because that's what I'm saying. If you start running on that and you don't meet Al Pacino, it'll be like, oh, where was
right.
Al? I'm not saying Al's in it. I'm saying Reddit crazies did an awesome deep dive on it, and I read it, okay?
Huh.
Okay. So that's the end of that. Here's what I'm trying to figure out, though, Robbie. These are like my main questions when I finished viewing it the first time, okay? We know Agatha Harkness now. Why, though?
Right.
Why? What is her motivation? And like, I want to go back now and rewatch all of WandaVision, which is maybe why it's genius of them to make her do this. Because I want to see, like, what was her motivation in every situation? Like, I thought the motivation was anytime Vision seemed to be on to things, she would interrupt. But then I would say she did kind of a crappy job because Vision still got there pretty quickly.
Right.
Like, figuring out what was going on. And then why let Wanda see it? Why trap Wanda down there? Like, is she trying to just separate Wanda and Vision? Like, these are all questions I have.
Yeah.
Like, what is her motivation? And what happened to the kids?
Well, no, oh, totally. So, you know what I also thought was interesting is this this could be such a dumb, random thing. Wasn't, like, the show that was on, didn't that look like it was, like, too young for the twins to be watching?
That's why I think it was the first weird sign. I'm not kidding. I think that was the first, like, something's out of place here. The food was half eaten. Then she sees the rabbit and she sees the fly. But the show was like a show for,
like,
5-year-olds. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. So then is there something even weirder going on with the rest of the children in Westview? Like, here's the thing.
Let me get to the end of my rant. Were the kids being, like, de-aged by her, like, in the same way that they were?
Oh, okay. Or are they attacked? Are we going to find out that they're dead? Like, that would be dark.
Yeah.
But that'd be one way to eliminate the quote-unquote mutant thing. You know, so that's why my question is, why though? Because we know now that at least on paper, Hayward's mission is pretty just standard, right? He wanted to get Vision to use him as a weapon. But we still don't theoretically know who created the bubble. Like, we know that Wanda can expand it. Did she create it? Did she remember that? We do get to see that Agatha can control some of the main events. But I don't know that we can take that and run with it and say she created the bubble.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like I was saying earlier where, like, it does make me wonder. I mean, we saw her messing with things.
And, right.
But, you know, again, going back to that conversation with Norm, you know, where he just said she and her, he never said Wanda. And the only person that said, well, I guess Monica said Wanda, it's all Wanda. But otherwise, that came from Agnes to Vision, which we now know, like, we were thinking that was an act in that conversation. And so, like, that's one of the more interesting things to me. Because, again, to your point, we have not seen Wanda do anything even close to this before. Like,
right.
The powers that we've seen her, like, she has been able to shift people's perception of things. So I guess you could argue, like, that the same way she gave all the Avengers those kind of visions, she's sort of giving everyone that. But this is different because she's literally changing the nature of people and objects. Like, it's not a perception thing. It's not like she's in your head. And so...
See, and that's why it's a group effort, because why would it be falling apart in this episode, right? Because Wanda can't keep her house together and, like, the video game controllers are changing.
Right.
Is that because Wanda is getting depressed and losing grip? But she can't control all of it, but she can control some of it.
Well,
that's what I can't figure out.
And the fact that we get the scene of her bringing in Pietro, like, that is interesting insofar as we know then that Wanda didn't manifest that. So
right.
Wanda may or may not have. The more and more I think about it, the more I think that this is going to be some sort of Twilight Zone type play on the deal with the devil thing. Whether we get Mephisto actually or whether it's an allusion to it, I think it's this thing where Wanda came and got Vision's body and realized that it wasn't within her power set to bring him back, but maybe came into contact with someone who does have that power
set.
And this is the whole, you know, kind of monkey paw thing, right? Where it's like she can get it, but it comes with all of this baggage, and it's not really the thing that you want back. It's like the ghost of it, literally.
So would Agatha's goal then just be chaos? Or power, or, like, why does she want to manipulate Wanda? why does she want to tear Wanda and Vision apart in this fake reality? Does she want to exist there forever?
Is it some way of her trying to bring in someone like Mephisto? Like, is there, you know, is it sort of like a Dormammu thing from Doctor Strange?
Gateway, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is that part of what the Darkhold is doing down there?
But that's what I love, again, what you said about this episode, is that it changed us from guessing, like, who into why. And that's a more fun guess. Like, okay, let's just get it out there that this is Agatha Harkness. But now we still don't know a ton of stuff. Well, it's not like it's over.
And one thing that I have to say, and I you know, as I was reading back through Avengers Disassembled, you know, doing my homework for this, I was just struck by Agatha Harkness is not necessarily a villain in the comics. I don't know that you could really call her that at all, which is strange because she's a witch and she's tied to the Salem witch trials. And that's, again, one of the kind of weirder Marvel worlds of them getting into the occult stuff. But as I was thinking about it, like in the comics, her relation to Wanda is she's kind of more of her teacher that teaches her how to use her powers. Also, she's a lot older, like appearing even in the comics. Like she looks like an old woman. And then like even whenever, basically what happens is there's that moment when you find out that the twins that Wanda and Vision have were willed into existence by Wanda because, and there's some really, really great writing there that I was tempted to just kind of almost read off on this episode, but I won't do that to people. But in terms of just kind of getting into the head of Wanda in the comics in a way that I think is really powerful too in the MCU, of thinking what would drive her to just think that she's almost owed a little bit of happiness, that she can carve out a slice of like, can I just have a family for a second? And willing that into existence in the way that we basically saw her do here in the comics. Agatha's role there is basically whenever it becomes clear that all of this is Wanda kind of quote unquote abusing her powers. Agatha is the one that kind of walks her back from the edge there and essentially deals with, and this could be foreshadowing something dark, but deals with this by making the kids disappear, like reveals it as sort of an illusion and kind of talks Wanda back through this, like, hey, you can't do this. You can't live in this fantasy world. And then ultimately later on, we find out that she in the comics gives Wanda kind of amnesia so she doesn't have to remember about the kids and all of that. And the way that all of this gets queued up there is that someone jogs her memory and then she gets back into this trauma mode and unleashes all of the stuff that eventually turns into House of M. The reason I say all that is none of that is Agatha being the villain. Like, you could argue she's the villain to Wanda because she quote unquote takes her kids away. And so that could for sure be happening in the show. But I just think to, again, go back to how predictable was this or was it not? I think it's just we've almost been operating from day one under this, like, well, Agatha's probably going to end up being the villain. But I think that there are a couple more twists, particularly in store, even to the point that, like, that character is a lot more complicated than that in the comics. And so I don't know that that's going to be – that even what we've seen now is all that's going on with her. And I think you're right. I think that there's a lot more potential – motivation or a lot more depth to her motivation there.
Where I'll leave it is just to say that I'm fascinated to see next week how quote unquote evil do they make her in this?
Right.
Like, is she some kind of mentor? Is she some level of that? Or is she strictly like, is she killing the kids, et cetera? Like, does this go like major dark or not? And I don't know. We're going to find out. My next question was, what does this really tell us about Pietro? Are we officially now confirming that this is not a multiverse? He's not the X-Men Pietro. This is just a guy that Agnes was controlling to look like her brother. And the fact that it was Evan Peters was just a wink to us. Is that where we're at?
That's where I'm at.
So it kind of was option one. After all this.
I think so.
Which is what I wanted to have happen.
Yeah. I think that makes the most sense. I think it's still a ton of fun. But yeah, I think that, however, you know.
Well, and again, if it turns out to be that, that's where I then reiterate and say, we got to be careful when we post things like, this could potentially make every movie canon, right? Like,
right.
It might not have been that at all.
Which, by the way, again, I saw all of those same articles pop up after the Nexus commercial where everyone's like, this is how Marvel's now introducing the multiverse. And I'm like, how many times are you going to say that this is how Marvel's introducing the multiverse? Because I'm pretty sure by that account, they've introduced it like 14 times already. But I do think there's the possibility, and this is, I hinted at this with you earlier. I do have some theories on how this could all play out. We're getting to the time limit here that we can expect people to listen, so I won't go into that. But I do think I could see a way in which, you know...
Cue us getting 100 emails saying, we don't care about the time.
I could see a way in which someone like Mephisto or whoever that she's working with, if there is this Nexus idea where there's this kind of gateway to different realities and maybe they pulled him from that reality, we could still be getting that version of I guess what we said was like our option three.
Yeah, or four.
Right. Where, you know, where he's pulled in and then it shows that there is like a multiverse thing, which would lead well into the Doctor Strange thing. So I'm not foreclosing that possibility.
Sure.
But I think that if that is happening, I don't think that that is. I think that the way this could all be playing out, this is all I'll say, and we'll have to have a longer episode on this. I mentioned that Secret Wars event, I think last episode or maybe two episodes ago, where Marvel kind of had all of these realities from the comics meet up, most notably their Ultimate Universe and then the main 616 universe dating back to the Stan Lee days. The more I think about it, if that is happening or if there is any multiverse kind of gateway going on, what I could see happening is Marvel working towards that event way down the line. And that would be a really interesting way to get all of this stuff resolved that people are kind of wanting without lessening the major MCU. Like if they have this moment, if this is all leading to this thing where there's a lot of bleed and like what you and I have talked about, there are these little moments and cameos of like, oh, look, here we have Tobey Maguire and there we have Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider and like whatever, right? Like everyone from all these properties. I could see because Doctor Strange in the Jonathan Hickman Avengers run, which leads to that, is pretty key and has some really memorable moments in this new Avengers time runs out thing that I'll have to get into later. I could see it being leading into something like that. It's way too early. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but I just want to put out that I am thinking about it. And that's a way that I could see all of this unraveling, but again, it would happen totally differently than it does in the comics by necessity. And I think that I would be excited to see how that plays out. We're way, way, way too early because again, I'm still leaning towards it just being option one and it being just a little fun cameo. But I just feel like I had to get that out so that if it does end up being that, I'm on the record here in February 2021.
Sure. But
end of rant.
Also, I found it notable, though, that he showed up in the mid-credit scene, which, by the way, for your viewers out there that missed that, this was the first episode that had a post-credit scene. It caught me by surprise. I was, like, walking around the kitchen, and I was like, oh, my gosh, there's more. There's a credit scene. And then he showed up after not being around, and he, you know, Snooper's going to snoop is what he said.
Right.
So he's still going to play some role in this, which is interesting, I think. Yeah, I don't know if he's going to help try to find them out of there or – who knows? We're going to find out more about him. My next big question was, so we don't really know what kind of alive is Vision. Does that make sense? Like,
True.
We don't know Vision, and that ties into another question I had, which is that if Hayward just physically with his eyeballs saw that Vision can't leave Westview, why is he still so set on getting him out of there or going to get him? Because he just saw that he can't leave. So I don't know if Hayward knows more or he's just not thinking about it. Maybe he knows more that he knows somebody like Doctor Strange who can change Vision back and bring him back to life or something outside of Westview. But I don't know what kind of alive Vision is, and I don't know why Hayward would want that version.
Well, maybe he's trying to figure out how to replicate whatever is happening in the hex, you know, to make it so that Vision can be that way all the time. And I mean, and also you could definitely see Hayward having an interest in sort of quote unquote brainwashing Vision in a way that has arguably been done by Wanda or Agatha or someone. I think that I bet we're going to get some more clarity there for sure. We didn't get much Hayward at all this episode. We had that one like 15 second scene. So I imagine either in next episode or the finale, which is crazy to say that we're already there. I think that we're going to get, I would hope, a lot more of an explanation there.
I could totally see these final two episodes being an hour long. It makes sense that this one wasn't because it was still the sitcom thing. It'll right. be fascinating to see, do they keep the sitcom thing going forward with like a version of Agatha all along? I know it sounds ridiculous, but is there a sitcom where she's running it? Or do they just totally abandon it for the last two, which I think I'd be okay with now. Like they've done it, but it doesn't make as much sense to keep the show going, I think. Dude, this is honestly, I say this every week, but this has exceeded my expectations. It's been so much fun. The show has been perfect to where it's a standalone show and it's really intriguing. I don't know what's going on. And I love talking about it and it's so tense. And yet I still think and kind of am hoping that it's going to then also lead into the next thing. Like I'm not missing the enjoyment of the show, but that it also could tie into bigger things.
Yeah.
Like Doctor Strange or Spider-Man. And it's been perfect that way, dude. I mean, it keeps me guessing. It's been bold. I haven't been able to predict what's going to happen. And even when I did predict it, it still felt shocking.
Yeah.
Like Agatha. I've had a ton of fun with it.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, they've just stayed a step ahead of us in such a fun way. Because the Agatha thing, you're right. I mean, even to the extent we predicted that, they still kind of turned it on its head some. And this kind of like, well, yeah, so what moment that I love. And that it is just, this show is, man, it's such a treat. And I've loved how much friends of mine are eating it up in the same way that we are. I think it's just like such a little bright spot in, you know, what has been a tough season for so many people. So I'm sad that we're kind of nearing the end, but I'm also really excited that we've got so much more coming, which is maybe a good way to close it. I don't know if you saw that there was a quote from, I think it was Sebastian Stan, maybe Anthony Mackie, but saying that Falcon Winter Soldier is going to have the same kind of twists and mysteries to some extent that WandaVision does, which is something that I was not really expecting from that in the same way. So that makes me excited to see kind of what it looks like in that different format. We've talked about how well they've utilized this format here. I'm glad we've got that to look forward to, and then Loki and a whole slew of other things. So it's a nice time to be a Marvel fan, Kyle.
no doubt is. Wow. We're getting all reflective. We still got two episodes to go.
I know.
What did we miss, everybody? I'm sure we missed some stuff. There's been so much jam-packed into this show. Like we said, every line matters. So let us know. Hit us up at the FFW Podcast on any social media and the FFWpodcast.com. And like we've said before a million times, we're so grateful for you guys. And I got to say this part. Robbie and I have talked off air about how sometimes these communities can get kind of toxic, like we mentioned on this podcast episode in some ways. And truly, no lie, Robbie and I have also talked about how thankful we are for you guys that our community that's seemingly growing seems to be very positive. Like it's just in general a positive thing.
Absolutely.
And that's been really fun. And I mean that. So I'm thankful for you guys. We have two more episodes of WandaVision left. And then we maybe have a little teaser coming up. There's some special stuff brewing, okay? We're working on some things that we can't wait to share with you. And then
we got some real fun stuff coming.
While we're figuring that stuff out, we're going to jump right back into Falcon and Winter Soldier after that, which I think I'm going to abbreviate currently to FWS. That still doesn't really work. I'll keep thinking about it. Like we said, there's a lot of good stuff coming. This has been so much fun. We're so thankful for all of you. Message us, hit us up. Let's talk. We'll see you back here, same place, same time, to talk about episode number 8 of WandaVision next time on Friends From Work.